Hello, hello. Welcome to the End Evil podcast. This is Chris Jansen, and evil is the destruction of freedom. I'm here in my new End Evil studio. It's a rainy October day, and I love this time of year, and I love the rain, but I don't love evil, and I don't love government, and I don't love coercion, and I don't love the loss of choices. But those are the things that we're stuck with. So we grumble through it and we try to tell people about natural law and freedom and truth. And along that path, we meet some other truth tellers and people doing it in fun, creative ways. And I've had the pleasure of meeting this gentleman who I'm about to bring in. This is Devin from a band called Apophysis. And I met Devin at Sound Path to Freedom event. And he and Georgia did this awesome set of music that blew me away. And I was like, man, you got to come on my show and we got to talk about everything and talk about your music. And I want to get to know you more. So here's Devin. Thanks for joining us and welcome to the End Evil podcast.
Chris, thanks for having me on. Yeah, appreciate that.
Yeah. So you're coming out of New York.
Right.
Busy city. And
definitely
blasting them with some truth music, right?
Yeah, doing our best.
Well, he had a really fancy new camera Devin started off with, but we had a little bit of audio trouble, so he just had to switch to his computer camera. So we got that cool bright light. You look like you're a beacon coming to us from a greater place.
Yeah, it would have been nice to do it with a proper kind of high fidelity camera and everything and audio, but you know, it's working now, so
it's weird. Like, remember at Sound Path there was like some audio glitch, or I don't remember exactly what the issue was, but you guys got to play your whole set a second time that evening because of an audio glitch earlier in the evening, right?
Exactly. I guess the way it was recorded wasn't according to, well, it was just, I guess, not, it didn't sound the way it did in the room. So they wanted to capture a better sound for the stream. So we ended up doing a second set at the end.
Which is like, glitches are part of the game. And
yeah.
So the show must go on, right? That's the name of the game. Just like I said in the beginning, you know, we're dealing with this difficult situation in the world where evil is the abundant belief system that many people are stuck in with the huge percentage of their time and energy. And we're trying to rip off that dirty band-aid of authoritarianism and coercion. I'm curious, why don't we start with just tell us a little bit about yourself, Devin, how you came to be here in the natural law understanding and checking out Mark Passio's material, and then winding up now you're on the One Great Work Network. Congratulations. I'm really excited to hear about that. What brought you here?
It's been a long journey. I don't know really where to start. I remember as a little kid kind of asking myself what the meaning of life was, and I was like, it can't be money. Right. You still hear me, right? Yeah. So I was like, it can't be money, because money, people just invented that. It wouldn't be gold, because although it's like something that is a natural resource, it's just kind of arbitrarily chosen as, you know, as a thing of value, but it's not like, you can't eat it. You can't, like, it doesn't, it's not, so it's just sort of arbitrary that we chose that to be the thing of value. So it's not money. It's not gold. What would it be? And I came to the conclusion at the time that it would be, I guess what you would call evolution. And what I decided in that moment is I want to understand my own thoughts, why I said things, why I thought things, why other people said things, why they did things, what was the meaning behind things. So I guess for me, I always go back to that moment as a choice to question why, you know. So that led me, you know, like now looking at like Manly P. Hall's work all these years later, right? He talks about this process of evolution, or Marx's, you know, Marx's work. He often talks about the first principle in the occult is to stop lying to yourself, right? So this was something that I I chose to do early on just to not lie to myself, to try to understand what I was thinking, what I was feeling. And that had helped me understand what other people are thinking, feeling. And so that was kind of how it started for me. But then through time, you know, realizing that, I don't know, that this whole political game is really, they're not sincere, they're not trying to help people. They may tell you that, they may promise nice sounding things, but then when they get into office, they continue the same agenda. And it's not maybe identical from administration to administration, but it's a continuation. So certain aspects of an agenda are accomplished with each presidency. And you can see that worldwide, you can see that throughout history, that these are not people we should be giving our trust to. So I sort of pieced that together just through living in this world and observing. And then I was interested in anarchism for a while, but I also found that a lot of anarchists kind of centered things that I didn't really think were the would be like the right strategy or like a lead to long-term liberation. Like kind of sometimes some the anarchists I kind of was you know, whose talks I would go to and stuff, sometimes would talk about, you know, and even though I respected their work in a lot of ways, it would often be about like kind of, I don't know, Molotov cocktails or how to like, you know, go toe to toe with the cops and this kind of stuff. And I understand the rage, you know, but I didn't see that as a winning strategy because, you know, that's kind of, I just saw that's how they want you to fight. But I knew that it had to be in consciousness. And I come to the conclusion that it's really just all about love, really, that there's this cosmic equation where there's just not enough love here. Our bonds are not strong enough to break free, and that people don't care enough. I mean, some people obviously do, and it's not like there's no love here, because then it would be just a total nightmare of a planet at all times, which it's not. You know, you can walk down the street and see all kinds of people coexisting without dominating each other as well. And, you know, so there is this natural order that can arise from a love-based coexistence, which again is not like kind of to be confused with having to be intimate or having to even like, you don't even have to like to hang out with everyone or anything like that. It's just love in the sense that you don't want people enslaved, that you don't want people dominated, that you honor their human rights. And that if we could just do that, that would build and grow and then we could break free. So I saw it as this spiritual thing. And I guess to go back even further, I got really into jazz music from a young age. And so people like Coltrane and his album Love Supreme, these were some of my biggest influences early on, as well as other jazz musicians. Yusuf Lateef, could go on and on about the music that inspired me, but that really gave me the inspiration early on to follow a path, a spiritual path, a path of, you know, also of self-improvement, you know, which is what occult traditions also are dealing with, right? Like to like, what is it? One of Manly P. Hall's lectures I was just listening to is, you know, just this thing that I've always observed in people, that they don't necessarily self-reflect. They don't necessarily take accountability and admit fault and then improve from there. It's like this block, this ego block, that I'm not going to look at that. I'm not going to question myself. I'm not going to try to understand why I said something or did something or what was underneath things emotionally, what fear. Like I started seeing, and then, you know, I started seeing more and more how it is really about love and fear, how we refuse to look at things because we're afraid of the pain that, you know, that comes with a recognition of culpability, a recognition of having been fooled, or a recognition of having said something that was ignorant, et cetera. So, and the more you delay that process of self-reflection, the harder it becomes, right? Because it's like after decades of your life not ever looking at yourself that way critically, or, you know, analyzing what is motivating this or that, it becomes harder and harder because now there are all these more decades maybe of things that you regret that you would have to, you like, you know. So I started seeing these, just observing that this is what's holding us back, that we don't want to admit that we're wrong. Oftentimes we want to double down, and how this is very much a key aspect of political ideology, that people, you know, they want to double down on lesser of two evils. And it's like, I just got off that bandwagon so long ago, and trying to talk to people around me who sometimes were of the same mindset, but oftentimes like, no, we got to do it. And all these years later, now with like the Democrats, just if there was any question, if you were like historically illiterate or whatever before, it's like, how much more evidence do you need? Because I come from a more, you know, left-wing family and stuff, so it was like I've been surrounded by either like more kind of liberals or neoliberals or whatever, like vote blue no matter who kind of folks, or more kind of left-wing folks that, you know, want socialism, this kind of thing. But I never really bought into socialism or communism. I never bought into religion, but I never bought into atheism. So all this to say, this was kind of my mindset, right? My worldview. And then COVID happened, right? And it was like, okay, so I started to understand the extent of the mind control. And it's really scary because like a lot of people were on board with people being forced into, you know, the countermeasures and protocols that were being, you know, pushed on people. And living in New York City, it's like you know, people would check your vaccine passport and stuff to just get a coffee. And I wasn't going to go along with that. Right. But I saw people, not all people around me, a lot of people around me weren't into it, but I also saw people around me who were like very coercive and really trying to push it on me and everything. It was like, okay, this is, you're doubling down on this political ideology always, like no matter how much evidence is there that this is, that, you know, these people are not to be trusted on the, you know, either wing of the empire. And but I realized that, you know, this religion of politics really, it's like it goes, for a lot of people, it just, there's seemingly no end to it. Like even towards their own family members and loved ones and friends, it's like they want to push some kind of experimental medical intervention on people, when like these companies have already been sued for billions of dollars for like knowingly poisoning people. And it's just like,
you see people getting so heated and divided over who should be the next ruler, you know. And I've seen family members and people that were best friends for 20, 30 years in their life, all of a sudden, they're not talking anymore because, you know, they're kind of rooting for the different ruler. And it's sad to see. But what I find is really amazing and kind of refreshing, how your personality or your thought process, it sounds like from very young on, you kind of were already separate in a way from that. And I've always thought about like the progression of becoming a being. When we're infants, you know, we go through these stages where we realize like, oh, this hand is not connected to this one. They're two different things, you know,
right.
The infant, you know, and we're hitting ourselves in the face when we're really small. And then we're like, oh my gosh, that's me scratching my own face. And then at a certain point, we have to kind of identify separately from the parent, you know, and I think right there, some people get emotionally traumatized in life, probably for a lot of reasons, and wind up just glomming on to this weird identification thing where they're identified yes. with a parent or identified with a structure and don't even really completely have that, what you're describing, that part of themselves that can ask questions from its own point of view and say, well, what does Devin think? What does Chris think? You know, and I think that's what we're trying to encourage in people, is to really ask those questions on a deep level. And your personality, I like how you've seem to have naturally done that on your own from a kind of intuitive point of view. But I'm curious, what type of media, like, do you, like some of our friends, like Will Keller, Brandon Martin, are real good at hitting the books, and these guys have read a lot of books, physical books. Me, I got into podcasts and listened to a lot while I was working. Never quite read as many books as some of the people that I love in our natural law community, but I've been so inspired mostly through podcasts and some reading too, but more so through audio. I'm curious how your learning process, what really broke through for you when you went through this process of questioning and realizing a lot of these things?
Yeah. So, well, in that same year, I mean, before COVID, we could go as far back as, you know, but like, of what, who, you know, inspired me in everything, you know, earlier in life. But that year was 2021, where I was seeing all this unfold. And that summer, you know, actually had, like, I mean, this is maybe a somewhat roundabout way of answering, but that spring in 2021, they were forcing, you know, the mandates on people. And I was like, this, you know, this is just another level of insanity that I watch people going along with and everything. It's like, and I went into the woods and ate some mushrooms and everything, and just like bawled my eyes out and just screamed, and snot was coming out, tears, you know, sweat, just vomit, and just screaming like fuck it all, like fuck this whole thing, fuck this, like this, and you know, thinking about like the genocide of Native peoples on this land, and just the whole construct of what we call civilization worldwide just being built on lies. And that moment was an important moment to like purge some of the fears that I felt were building up, like all these things that you learn, oh, well, I shouldn't say that, I shouldn't say this, and self-censor this way, self-censor that way, because all this fear that's running through your head. And I felt it building up over time and getting locked in. And I saw how I was, there was forces of mind control and sorcery at work trying to like, you know, usher you into this like specific bandwidth of behavior and thought process. And I kind of just like shattered it, you know? And like a couple of weeks later, I was like going through my emails and I saw a friend had sent me this link like maybe a month or so before. I was like, oh, I wonder what this is, natural law seminar. So I clicked on it, and it was Mark's, you know, natural law seminar. And I was like, finally, someone addressing the underlying psychological aspects to all of this, the fear, the love, the cosmic equation, you know, the natural law. And, you know, getting back to to nature, right? And to the nature of our own psychology, the nature of principles of coexistence that are built into our reality, right? And instead of this idea that we need lawmakers, well, there are already laws in play at the within the universe. And so why not live by those principles instead, rather than trying to put yourself in the seat of God as the lawmaker? I'm going to decide what the law is going to be for everyone. And rather than believing that as a voter or so-called citizen, why not just, you know, align yourself to the pre-existing laws of nature, which, you know, obviously there are all these counter arguments too, but I always felt like, no, this is, I was of that mindset, and Mark helped me not only lend nuanced language to that, but he taught me that this is an ancient body of knowledge that's been occulted. So what I realized in that moment is that my worldview was so important to share with others because it's the thing that has been occulted. And it's what is what the body of knowledge, what the body of knowledge within the occult is. And it's, of course, the occult. It shouldn't be the occult. It shouldn't, because the occult, of course, means hidden. It shouldn't be hidden. It should be common sense. And that I realized I always thought, like, I was, you know, in 2020, there was the protests, the George Floyd protests, and I was in this group of abolitionists during Occupy City Hall, downtown Manhattan stuff. And I was around some people that insisted, I mean, there were many different perspectives, but some people were saying, it's good to have smaller groups and you can do more. And I can understand that for social reasons and things like that. But as far as breaking free from this paradigm, we need greater unity. We need, like, we need to spread our message far and wide. We need, like, to reach each other, right? Through conversation, through communication. So I'd also come to that same conclusion. And I guess I would just piecemeal my information, my inspiration from many different people that were putting out works. But when I found Mark's work, he was dealing with a lot of these underlying principles. And he taught me that that I have a responsibility. Because I think at some point when I was younger, I thought, who am I, kind of thing? Like, I see what's going on, but, like, I'm just one person. What can I do? And I don't want to be self-aggrandizing and think that, you know, I have some responsibility. And that's part, I think a lot of people fall into that trap. But what he reminded me was, like, actually, we all have this responsibility, and it's not self-aggrandizing at all. It's just a part of being alive. Like, we inevitably are responsible for the coexistence we're co-creating. So, I just realized at that point how important it was to speak out, and that was so. So that's what inspired this kind of next chapter in my life. It was like his work was a catalyst for helping me understand my responsibility to speak out and then also learn more. So then I started reading more. I got the ARC. I started studying the ARC. So a lot of other people's work, Michael Tsarion or Anthony Sutton, you know, who I started reading his books about getting more into how the scam of socialism and communism and just this whole left-right paradigm, capitalism versus socialism, they got us in this, like, left-right argument when really it's, you know, the same hidden hand is controlling both sides. Like, the Wall Street bankers are funding the Bolsheviks, and, like, the whole thing is just such a scam. And so I really wanted to learn as much as I could about that to help spread that message that, like, don't fall for this left-right trap. Don't fall for the socialist, communist trap. And a lot of people around me still insist, you know, with, like, now the election of Mamdani and everything, it's like, people are really there. And I understand the desperation. It's like, we have to act like all this shit is going on. Trump's got ICE in New York. You like, you need someone to get into the political office and use the throne of power against the bad guys. But it's like, it's the just, world,
the world is so material based.
Yes.
And outcome based. You know, I really think that's one of those things that Marx's work really hit a home run for all of us, you know, describing the manifestation process, something that
right.
I'm noticing in you and I have a similarity. Some of us that are a little more on the right brain creative side make this connection easier in some ways. Because it's like, there is this other part of life and reality that you're describing, this greater all, right? I like yes. to just use the good old word God, but that word gets confused because of religions.
Yeah.
And like you're mentioning this thing about occulted, you know, these things that are hidden. It's what's so weird about it is it's all so obvious.
Once you see it,
it's like one of those pictures, you know, where you have to put your eyes funny, but like, this is the normal way. And we're putting our eyes funny all the time to be in this weird world where everybody's putting up with this. And it's partly because people are so damaged from early on. And so I think it's just really refreshing, whatever your folks did or your community that created this area where your mind could blossom and ask questions and have your own individual thoughts and then be able to do your self-work. So then you can see what's going on in the world. And once you actually look at yourself and are really honest, like you said in the beginning, I think that's part of what allows someone to kind of be able to be a little bit more objective about the situation and not have to identify with the evil when you can see it for what it is. You're like, wait, that's not me. I'm part of the care love thing that I have a lot of value deep within me just by being here. And that's magical. So, man, there's so much you said that I wanted to comment on, but just a few of those little things, tidbits. But I'm curious how then, now that's already an amazing jump you made from just coming to realize these things to, oh, I have to take responsibility and do something right. about this now. And right. then the fact that now you've learned even, to me, a level above that of transcendence is doing something creative and beautiful with that message that is actually palatable on the other end. And so how I'm curious then, how did you make this translation to putting it into your music and forming this awesome union with your partner and making music together and putting this into it and being so lucky and amazing, or maybe magnetizing the right person into your life? I mean, most people have trouble finding someone they can even talk to about this stuff. And you guys found each other and then started putting something out there that's powerful. And I think that's amazing. So I'd like to hear a little more about how that all happened. How did Apophysis come about?
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
That's a lot, I know, but right. Do what you can.
I mean, as far as what led up to Apophysis, like I said, there are certain artists early on in my life that really, yeah, Coltrane, Bob Marley. I mean, something like Bob Marley, Get Up, Stand Up for Your Rights. Like this kind of music always really spoke to me. And I have been working within like instrumental music mostly, like my main instrument is saxophone, actually, or the one I've kind of put most time into, and composing jazz music. But I started being I've always actually been kind of very deliberate about song titles and stuff. So I was even before, you know, COVID and all that, like I was writing songs like about karma, like about this song I have called Keepers. I started writing lyrics, you know, and kind of dealing with this idea of cosmic principles. And then I wrote a song called In the Mess, you know, dealing with like just the mess of human coexistence, but that one didn't have lyrics. I wrote a song called like Vaccination Rain, because I was fortunate to be around people who also, you know, question everything, right? I've had mentors like that as well for a while, people I've worked with, who I actually went, this one guy I work with in this band named Thomas Sayers-Ellis, he actually just passed away recently, and I went back and looked at his emails, and at one point he was like, years ago, he was like, he sent me the cover of the Secret Teachings of All Ages, you know. So he was talking to me about vaccination. He was talking to me about various things that would be categorized as conspiracy theory. But I would always, you know, I'd always question, or I never believed in 9/11 growing up, then the official story and these kinds of things. So I was just, but I was fortunate to be around other people who questioned those things openly and without fear. And that helped kind of give me the confidence to do the same, even just conversationally, but also publicly. So I slowly was putting this stuff more and more in my music. But then, as I said, in 2021, I realized like the full realization of my own responsibility being alive and just having to like, yeah, just being a part of this whole karmic cycle and being attached to the human species in this way. And like, you know, dealing with our traumas and mess and just being implicated in all of that, understanding my responsibility to really put it more deliberately, this message, into my music. So, you know, I was talking about the trip before with mushrooms. I came up with the title in that moment for what became my next album, which is Water Melancholia, which was dealing with like this disconnection from nature, this alienation. And so I started writing the lyrics to that. And even before then, I was writing the lyrics to this album called Infinity Zero, which is actually just coming out all these years later. But that was also dealing with like this idea of that the spirit goes on beyond, you know, the death of the body, that that we're part of this magical universe, and that we should honor that and humble ourselves and be in that and have the care for the natural phenomena and for ourselves and for each other and for nature and for animals and all this, right? So I started putting it more and more into the lyrics, but then and started speaking out in concerts too. So that happened in 2021, where I, between songs or whatever, I'd speak out. And then also writing in liner notes, like when, cause I release some stuff on vinyl and stuff. So I put liner notes. I've been very fortunate to work with labels that are amenable to that. So writing, I had an album I had been working on for a long time called Kadef. And I didn't know what the title should be for the longest time of this music, but I settled on Kadef because it was karma, agape, discernment, enactment, freedom, Kadef. And so I started putting it into the liner notes, more into the lyrics. And then in 2023, I met Georgia on a tour because she also plays acoustic bass and jazz as well. And so a friend of ours recommended her, because I was looking for a bass player on this tour. And then we met up and started playing the jazz music in my group Braja. So then we were playing this music, and I was speaking between songs and everything, and we became close friends and started talking about all this stuff. And then she said she was going to come visit New York for a couple months because she had been wanting to do that. And then we became closer and closer, and sooner or later we got together. And then she told me she wanted to start a grunge band or a rock band, because she's been writing all these guitar riffs and songs and stuff. So she's like, you want to be the drummer in it? Because she knew I also played drums. I said, yeah, let's do it. And she just pumps out compositions all the time. Like it's amazing, just the amazing music that flows from her. But she writes so many songs that it almost like they're almost too many to keep up with and write lyrics for and stuff. So she was like, that's not the part that comes the most naturally to her. She just like writes all these songs but doesn't want to have to necessarily like compose all the lyrics. So I was like, I understood that this was all kind of destined to be, right? So it's like, okay, these are amazing songs that need lyrics. So now let me put my knowledge into this process and try to fit the message of liberation, you know, of natural law, of anarchism, meaning, of course, no one has the right to rule over anyone, and that the throne of power is never legitimate, no matter how, like, how, whatever nice sounding things they promise or whatever, they don't have authority over us. And we don't have authority over each other. So how could we delegate that authority to them? You know, how can we give them the right to rule others if we don't have the right to rule over others? Oh, by the way, also got into Larkin Rose's work through Mark's arc and some of just when he mentions his work in his podcast. So got into Lysander Spooner, Emma Goldman, and these other anarchists, you know, throughout time, and kind of just get digging into all that. And so I knew then I had the task of distilling this message into these songs that have particular, like the melodies, the chords are already written, right? So it's like you have to fit in the message within the contour of the melody. And it became a really cool challenge for me. I come from a family of writers and stuff, so I've always been like dealing with the written word and spoken word. So just started putting the message into the music, and then, you know, that's how Apophysis came to be.
And I love the name. Apophysis, for people don't know, the practice of describing something by stating characteristics which it does not especially have, you know, or human language isn't insufficient to describe. So raising an issue by claiming not to mention it, as in we won't discuss this, you know, that be an apophetic way to start a discussion. What did you mean by the name of the band? I'm curious by that.
Well, as I told Mark at Soundpath, like I first heard the word from him, you know, and really, really, I've been around some people that fortunately were really interested in etymology. So I was always interested, like, what does the word originally mean? What was the original meaning, and what's the root meaning of the word? And what word does it come from, in Latin or Greek or whatever? And I really appreciate that about Mark's work, that he goes back to the root of language, so we know what we're actually saying, as far as like not just connotatively but etymologically. And so anyway, I've learned various terms and words from his work, but that was one word I was not familiar with. So I was, you know, when it was time to name the band, I thought it was a great name for it, because it our music sounds like, it just sounds like it resonates with that, the way that word sounds, apophysis. And it's describing the truth, what you consider to be true through negation. So, you know, freedom is not one person ruling over another, or a human right is not initiating harm to another, or saying what something is not. So you can kind of rule out what something is not, so that you're left with what it is, right? And I thought this is an amazing word, because it also speaks to our times. Like maybe at this late stage of human history, we could learn what not to do, right?
Yeah,
and just right. remove the toxic ingredient of domination, right? From right. our worldview, from our, you know, what we condone, and also interpersonally in how people treat each other. But even people who, in my experience, aren't interpersonally domineering still condone like mass murderous, evil, domineering shit out of some lesser two evils ideology kind of mindset. So,
which it always is an extra. I've, you know, the more I've tried to describe evil on the show, you know, commonly people just kind of want to say evil, that's something we can't do anything about. You know, it's a universal thing. Like, well, right. I guess in one sense, that's true. That's what I always describe as the yin yang, the dark and the light. Sure, there's always going to be these different dynamics in terms of principles and reality in the universe. But that doesn't mean we have to go around doing extra things that are wrong. It doesn't mean we have to steal from one another. It doesn't mean we have to take things. Those are things that you don't need to do. You could just live and get along with people, which sometimes takes more effort to communicate our needs and our desires and differentiate between ourselves and others and what we need and what they need. Sometimes that's all tricky, don't get me wrong, but we don't really need to steal from people. We don't really need to rape people. We don't really need to murder people. Those are all things that don't need to be done. And so it's just a question of how do we go forward without doing these extra things that are causing problems that we don't really need? You know, how do we encourage others to recognize that that is the case and that's the priority with our time here? You know, it comes from asking a lot of good questions and having the ability to ask those questions is what you're encouraging and the flavor of your music. Now, I came from, I graduated high school in 1994. I went to Pearl Jam in person, Nirvana. I crowd surfed right next to Kurt Cobain. I went to a Grateful Dead concert live. I had my hair dyed green. Butthole surfers, you know, surfing on the crowd. So I was all about the alternative grunge when it came out, Stone Temple Pilot, all those bands, you know. And so when I heard your guys' music and punk, I went through my punk phase, my heavy metal phase. And then later I got into hip hop and rap, strangely enough. But when I heard your music and the way you guys played it, I was just instantly in love because I'm like, this is a combination of so much styles and types of music that I already love, and the way it's being played is high level stuff. And so I'm curious, first of all, like, how do people find your other stuff? Because I'm going to share with the show your Instagram, the Apophysis YouTube, and also we'll talk in a minute about Archive Generation. But first off, like, how do I find your other music? Are you on like Bandcamp, Spotify? Because didn't find your older album stuff. I'm curious about that now.
Yeah. I'm Braja, what is it? BrajaWaldman.bandcamp.com. So Braja, BrahJa. Braja, and then my last name, Waldman, WALDMAN. BrajaWaldman.bandcamp.com. I think that's should be my link to my Bandcamp. So I put my jazz records there. They're also you know, on different streaming platforms and stuff like that as well, under the moniker Braja, BrahJa. So that's
cool. We'll get that link together and put it on the screen when I stream this show. But yeah, that's awesome. And also, you mentioned Coltrane, and the first time I had an introduction to jazz when I got this job working with these older guys at this maintenance man guys, and one of them was like all into jazz, and I remember he gave me a cassette tape with John Coltrane, and I used to listen to that up and down that mountain where I worked at, and that brought back the memory when you mentioned Coltrane. So yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, just that music, like listening to Coltrane and Elvin Jones and McCoy Tyner and Jimmy Garrison and Roland Kirk and Thelonious Monk and Charles Mingus. Like, this was, I grew up in a family where we had these vinyl, and Eric Dolphy, Ornette Coleman, Alice Coltrane, Sun Ra, these people rock my world, right? The and it, what it taught me is what a human can do and be, right? And like, there's no, there, we, yeah, we can blow everything up. We have that cleverness that we could split an atom and just destroy everything, but you can use that intelligence for, you know, cosmic love, for, you know, spreading messages of liberation, for creating exquisite sounds and that uplift and inspire. So it really, that music really inspired me very young. I was also into hip hop from a young age, and also into rock music from a young age, going back to, you know, 60s and 70s bands, but also 80s, 90s, and just, loving music across all these genres and all these categories, just loving music from all over the world. And always loved playing drums and stuff. So, rock and roll, punk, everything like that was always a big inspiration to me. And fortunately, I met Georgia, who writes this music, because when I write music, it tends to come out more jazz oriented, with the rare exception. But she has these amazing rock tunes that flow from her. So, you know, it just feels meant to be.
Like peanut butter and jelly. That's awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to listening to your stuff more. Are you guys going to put out like maybe an album or something?
Yeah. We just finished mixing a record and doing some last minute overdubs and stuff. So we have a whole record. We actually have another record too that we did a home recording of, but we want to put out the more high fidelity one first that we went into a studio to do. And we have a whole record now. We're just looking for the right home for it. So we've been sending out to some people and just kind of, you know, seeing what's out there, because we want to put it out as quickly as possible. It's done now. So probably early 2026 or so, it'll be coming out. We put a couple tunes up on YouTube that we made some videos for SoundPath. So we did those videos for that reason, put them out. But there's 10 more tunes on the record that we want to put out. So
right on. I can't wait.
Georgia's also working on a solo record.
Okay.
With acoustic guitars, because some of the songs she writes lend themselves to that, you know, that
right on.
So you know, she's laying down those tracks as well as we go, kind of doing home studio style. So there's definitely going to be music coming out from Apophysis.
Right on. I'm looking forward to that. And we'll have to have you back on, maybe bring Georgia too. You guys want to, when you get that released, we'll make an announcement about that. But how about, I found your website. You told me about archivegeneration.com. You want to talk a little bit about that so people can check that out?
Yeah, well, so in archivegeneration.com, I have a podcast series. For now, it's just myself talking, but I'm going to be branching out and having, doing an interview series or a conversation series as well, like we're doing here. But basically I'm in Worldview Dilemma. I'm just kind of, I'm discussing, yeah, like a love-based worldview, you know, a worldview that's not, that doesn't hinge on coercion, that doesn't hinge on some people ruling over others, some people having the right, yeah, to dominate others, the right, quote unquote, to dominate others. 'Cause like all these worldviews that we get, you know, our heads get pumped full of like from a young age, they actually, if you kind of dissect them, deconstruct them, they all hinge on domination. So I talk about all those things. I talk about how democracy is not liberation, how how, yeah, like various things that we get sold. Like, you know, democracy is what we need. It's like, we don't have a democracy. We don't have a real democracy. It's like, well, what actually is democracy, even something that honors this principle of equal rights? When you deconstruct it, no. So I kind of, what about Marxism, you know? What about capitalism? What about all these things that it's like, that we're supposed to choose between? Well, when you dissect, you know, something like Marxism, when you read his own work, it's definitely hinging on authority. It's definitely hinging on some people's right to rule over others. And we're supposed to all get ushered into this like blueprint that the Marxists, that Marx himself and Engels and others designed for us. But it's like, it doesn't respect equal rights. It doesn't respect consent for what people do with their own bodies. And that's fucked up. And like, let's just stop entertaining these different ideologies and systems that all rely on, you know, coercion to function, like, you know, banking monopoly, corporate monopoly, state monopoly. Is there something else that we don't have to choose between? You know, obviously we live in a banking state corporate monopoly that's now, that's also directed by secret societies that is, you know, that form think tanks and whatnot and then control economic, monetary, and militaristic and political policy. But we're caught up in these monopolistic systems that that are just illegitimate, that are all built on a lie. And there's something else, you know, we could be doing if we could free our minds from these authoritarian ideologies to begin with, then our aggregate actions could add up into freedom and justice. But we have to free ourselves spiritually and mentally so that we can co-create that reality that is our birthright, which is freedom. So that's kind of the long and short of it. But I just, for anyone that needs that kind of verified, or you know, if you want to go through all the various steps and what comprise these different systems, what behavior and why the police are illegitimate, why the military is illegitimate, why taxation is illegitimate, why borders are illegitimate, any of those things, I just kind of painstakingly go through all of them one by one, but always coming back to this message of love, of that we don't own each other. It's so simple. But these policies, these laws put into place, they don't honor that principle. And we just need to like stop lying to ourselves about that. So that's what it is. And I also speak out a lot on TikTok, you know, and TikTok. I've had some reach some people there, and Instagram, whatever, all whatever. Also Substack, I do a lot of writing. I just published this piece about the 5 ongoing genocides. There are arguably more genocides happening right now, but I go through, you know, what's happening in Tigray, Ethiopia, the genocide there, genocide in Congo, genocide in Sudan, genocide in Gaza, and genocide in Yemen, and kind of looking at how they're all, it's like a very, very similar thing is unfolding in each of these. And then I also, in the last part, kind of meditate on what we can do, what could be done. And it gets back to this collective responsibility, you know, because as taxpayers, as
we were all working on it,
corporate banking monopolies, we're financing this shit with or without knowing or our approval. Like you can't just, you like, it's gotta be a worldwide collective rebellion, right? You know, to really have the energy to stop this. So on Substack, it's devinbwaldman.substack.com. So I do some writing there, and I also publish some interviews. Like I go to Washington Square Park and interview people. I ask them what their worldview is. And I think you're muted, by the way.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. Can you hear me now? What'd I do? Am I coming through now? What happened?
I don't know why.
Huh.
But yeah.
Looks like it's working on my end.
That out. I still don't hear you. Maybe it's me, but I don't hear you.
Yeah, it seems like it's working on my end.
Do you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I go to Washington Square Park just with a, you know, a Zoom recorder. It's not camera. I think people are especially like feel especially emboldened to speak their mind without their name or face being attached to what they're saying. So I ask people about their worldview, and sometimes we have conversations, sometimes even debates and whatnot, and then I post that to my Substack as well.
That's awesome. Glad you're doing that.
So I'm just wondering why I can't. Weird.
Yeah, it does seem to be working. I'm not sure why you can't hear it.
Some of the other folks there as well. So it was really great to meet everyone, you know, and share our work for such an audience, and also hear other people's work, and have the chance to meet and have a proper conversation. I had met Mark briefly at Two Mass Same Face. I went to that event in 2023, but it was very brief, so it wasn't really it was just really just thanking him for the presentation he had just given. So it was a chance to talk to people and share my work with people. So it was a big opportunity for me and for Georgia as well. Like we had a great time hanging out, talking, sharing work, you know. And then right after, you know, Mark invited me on to the One Great Work Network. So that was a big moment for me, just to be able to like meet and let people kind of know that I'm out here doing the same thing, and that we could team up and, you know, do it together. And so being invited to the One Great Work Network, you know, receiving that email was a great day as well. Just like, okay, like affirmation, you know, that I'm doing the right thing and putting the work out there. So then, you know, started uploading videos to One Great Work Network and going from there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Excited to see you on there. And I think for me, one of the most valuable, actually things that has worked, has been networking, meeting other people. One thing I love to do on the podcast is have like roundtable discussions or interviews, just because anyone can listen to just one person, then you can just write off that one person as being too opinionated or wrong, and, you know, or someone just doesn't like that one person. But when you hear multiple voices, different ages, different male, female voices, and that's what we try to do in the, you know, Freedom Under Natural Law conferences too, bring in more voices, more perspectives, more angles on the same topic, the more real and embellished that topic then becomes, you know, for the general public or whoever might happen to come across this stuff. So I really appreciate what you're doing, and I'm thankful that you're out there doing it in multiple ways and multiple platforms. So I'm sure we'll be bumping up against each other's work a lot in the future and do maybe more shows together. You guys sure have inspired me. I've been working on my own music again, which is something I kind of put to the side for a lot of years. And I'm really excited to be working on some tracks and be putting out some music soon. So that's exciting for me too.
It's awesome.
So yeah, thank you for inspiring me and being part of the networking process. And so the floor is yours. Anything else you want to tell people about or talk about before we close up tonight, feel free. The mic is you.
Well, I mean, we could get into like, I don't know. I think for a lot of people, what probably not your audience so much, but whoever may come across this, you know, there's a hang up for a lot of people, and I understand it. Like it's true that if we stay in our aggregate level of consciousness now, with or without government, we're just going to create other tyrannical structures. We're going to create there are other cartel gangster systems that will fill that void. We really need to evolve among a critical mass. There are psychopaths that will not be taking part in evolution because they're dug in. They're doubling down. They're not gonna look within and have a change of heart. You know, they're not to say someone who has been kind of societally conditioned into psychopathy can't come out of that, because the whole society's, you know, psychopathic, government itself psychopathic, like basing everything on money is psychopathic. So you kind of get like ushered into psychopathic ways of thinking just by being in this world, right? Especially the way money is essentially owned and controlled. It's not an honest means of exchange. It's a device of theft. And you can really break that down once understanding banking. But in any case, we would need to evolve, which is the whole purpose of what has been referred to as the great work, so that a critical mass of humanity can align themselves to this very, very, what should be common sense principle of that we do not own each other. We have no right to rule over each other. We do have the right to defend ourselves from aggression, but not the right to initiate the aggression, be the aggressor, be the one enslaving others. But that's not pacifism for anyone who's confused. Of course, that's not being the aggressor, and the right to liberate yourself from enslavement are two different things. Like if someone's coming to murder your family, you don't have to just say, oh, go ahead. Right.
Yeah. That's huge. What you're talking about there. And part of why a lot of my work has gone over towards working more into self-defense, self-protection, and starting to create more content on that, because I feel like that's sort of the missing link in all this. I feel like the aggression principle, right? Non-aggression principle makes sense kind of across the board. People get that in theory, you shouldn't hurt other people. You shouldn't do things to other people that you don't want done to you, right? Like a lot of people will agree with that, but that it's your responsibility and your right to defend your person and innocence around you. That's a little harder to swallow, because people have been trained in conditioning thinking like, no, that's the job of the police or the military. See, they take the money from my check, and that money goes to these accounts, and then these accounts get figured out by these politicians, and then it's their job to protect me and keep me safe. They just don't do a very good job of it, right? But the truth is, we haven't really seen a society that has any sort of self-organizing capability to defend itself very well. Even one of the best communities I can think of that survived a lot of the weird belief systems, even with their own belief systems, like the Quakers or the Mennonites, the people that have sort of sequestered themselves from society and said no, or certain native cultures have tried to maintain some sort of tribal integrity within their own belief system, which they see goes pretty far. They can resist a lot of bullshit just by having that networking and community. But without the extra piece of, you know, actually, how do we protect ourselves? How do we stand up against something that's trying to enslave us? That means we have to train and practice in doing that. And maybe even doing it at a moment notice. You know, historically, you might have a bunch of farmers out in the fields, and then there's some force coming in from somewhere else to invade and take all our food. Well, that means we need to put down the plowshares and pick up the swords, because otherwise they're going to come take our stuff, you know? And so that means people had to self-organize and practice and train in their muscles and their physical form how to defend themselves. And that's a lost art. and it's a lost training. Only 1-2% of the population train at all for anything. Even police who are supposed to be trained don't train nearly enough, and that's why they have so many accidents and terrible things they do to people, because of lack of proper training. So, you know, I do think that what you're saying is, yeah, we do have to spread this knowledge, but I think part of the reason people have trouble seeing it, the responsibility end of it, because we don't see a lot of that in the world, people taking self-responsibility for their own person and being able, much less understand psychologically, that it is their responsibility to defend their own life and no one else's. Oh no, I lost Devin. I hope he comes back right after I went on a little too long of a talk there. Yes, he came back right on.
I was frozen there for, was I frozen on your side too with my screen?
You just disappeared for a second and I was like, oh no, right after I went on talking a little too long, I was just about to hand you the mic back. And
but before that, my I wasn't frozen on your end?
I don't think so. I was too busy yakking away. I didn't know.
Okay, good. Glad to be back. But
totally. Yeah, anyway, that's the whole tangential subject. But you know,
it's important. You brought that up,
and yeah.
I mean, and the thing is, we can defend each other, and we can see that as a responsibility too. But it's not like it's not something. Like what we have with the police, right, is it's a protection service, in quotes, that you're forced to fund under the threat of abduction, well, financial punishment, you know, fines if you don't pay those fines, dispossession, kidnapping, incarceration, and violence if you resist. So wait a second. I'm funding my protection under the threat of violence. That's not protection. Obviously, if we're really going to honor this principle of protection, it shouldn't come under the threat of confinement in a cage and violence. And, you know, if you resist their protection, quote unquote, it's obviously that's an aggressive paradigm. That's a non-voluntary paradigm. If I said, Chris, I'm going to protect you. I'm going to be your protector. And you're like, well, actually, I'm good. Or you'd be like, oh, maybe if I need help, I could call you. Like, yeah. But you know what? If you don't give me money, I'm gonna cage you. Wouldn't you be like, wait a second, I don't trust you anymore.
I don't think I want to hire you to be my protection guy anymore.
Exactly. So if anyone can learn how to protect themselves, someone might hear what we're saying and say, but I don't think I'm as good as protecting yourself. Granted, that's what the right to own a weapon can ultimately, like, you, it doesn't mean you have to own a weapon, but you have the right to, if you're like someone who's not of like a big physique, I'm not a real strong guy or anything either, but like if you're someone who's like, let's say, a smaller person who's like, how am I going to defend myself against like a 300-pound, you know, jack dude? Well, a weapon does equal that playing field, right? Like if someone, you know, if someone's come to rape and murder your family, even if you're much smaller, now you can defend against them. So I, you know, it'd be wonderful if guns never existed. We didn't invent bombs and all this shit. If we don't, you even use our in creative intelligence to do that. But that ship has sailed. Like that, the genie's been let out of the bottle. Guns exist. If you think like the state should just disarm everyone and make it harder for regular people to access weaponry, what you're feeding into is a state monopoly on weaponry. They're the most mass murderous institution in human history, the state is. And that leads to genocide and totalitarianism when the state is the only one that has weapons. So honor the right to self-defense. If you want to enlist other people's help, that's also cool, but you shouldn't have to be forced to fund their salaries under the threat of incarceration or a portion of their salaries. And they're also, besides, police are also the ones that beat everyone up in protests. So it's like we get together, we try to break free from some unjust construct around the world. Who's sent in to disperse the crowd? Who's sent in the tear gas people, to cage people, to kidnap people? It's the police. Who drags people in the cages for ingesting substances? even plants that grow in the ground. It's the police who enforce the authoritarian rule of politicians, regardless of what those laws happen to be. It's the police who are the boots on the ground for every totalitarian system. It's the police, it's the military, it's the border patrol, it's the prison guard, it's the agents of the state that have this alleged authority to dominate people, right? But they're just flesh and blood. You wear a costume, you wear a uniform and a badge, you're still flesh and blood. You have no more rights than anyone else. You don't have the right to aggress and dominate people. Who came out of slave patrol? The police. So yes, this is the trick of the ruling class fosters dependency by giving you some protection. Like, the police are the ones dominating humanity or keeping humanity stuck, along with other agents of the state, stuck in this construct. But it's also convenient to be able to call someone in a bind, right? Especially if you haven't trained, especially if you don't have a weapon, especially if you don't have people around you in a community that you could call in that bind. So that they fill that void, just like it's convenient to be able to, like, maybe get a artistic grant or some housing or some food from the state. But that's why they impoverish you. They dispossess you, they impoverish you, they team up with bank corporations to, you know, and central banks to like create inflation and make life unaffordable. And they say, oh, but now we have a new state program. So they expand that way as your protector and provider. But this is what all narcissistic abusers do. They foster dependency. Now you're dependent upon them for food, for shelter, for your protection. And it's harder to break free. It's harder to bite the hand that feeds you. This is a classic move where they foster dependency and they make life untenable, unaffordable for the average person. And then they say, well, I guess the state needs to expand and control even more. And oh, there's a mass shooting, give more power to the state. Oh, your people are poor, give more power to the state. Everything, it's like, yeah, they're creating these crises in large part. And then obviously offering the solution on the other end of it. It's just, you know, it's a tactic that's been going on for thousands of years. We got to get hip to it. But it is daunting, right? Because we need more horizontal community. We need to be able to look out for each other. We need to be able to step up and care for each other if people are in need without going through this violent third party. And that seems like that is a tall task. And I understand how daunting that is. And people want to just keep going, trying to find protection, justice, care through a rigged system. But it's like, look,
problem, like, reaction, solution. That's where you know David Icke did a really good job of explaining that progression.
There you go.
And really, you know, I was talking about the self-defense thing, but in my practice, you know, even though I'm really enjoying and learning a lot from the physical practice, it really all does come back to the philosophy. And any good teacher of it will teach you that same thing. The philosophy, ultimately, your mentality is so important. And it is ultimately what decides what choices you make, what situations you get into. And we can't just turn back the clock to tomorrow and be like, oh, there's no more government. You know, that's what people always want to say when you get into this disagreement. Like, well, everything would go crazy. Well, it's not just going to happen tomorrow. Even if everyone realized tomorrow, it would still take some time, you know, to start making these changes. But in the meantime, what we have to do is understand these principles on a deep level, so that we could potentially even go in that direction. Because right now it's like, if you don't even believe this thing is possible, how are you going to do it? Yeah. You know, if you don't think it's even possible to get across a river, then why would you even try? You would never try to cross a river if you didn't think it was possible. And so the river we need to cross is one of the psychological boundary or border or occulted hidden aspect that says, we need someone to rule over us. We need to organized in this coercive fashion. Right. And there's no, you know, it's partly just the hope that it is possible that evil is going to end. And that's what I love so much about Jeremy Locke's book, The End of All Evil, that I always talk about with this show, that he does say that it's just a matter of time till this dynamic changes. The question is, do you want it to be a billion years from now, or do you want to be part of the change sooner than later? And I personally want to be part of the change sooner or later. And I see that you do, Devin. So I think that's awesome. And we're kind of getting towards the end of the show here, but any last important thoughts you want to share with people that you want them to take away from this convo? And then we'll close up and we'll have to definitely get together again, because we got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, just picking up where you left off there, it's like it's so people get caught up on the likelihood. It's like, because it seems unlikely, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're not united. We're like, I mean, left and right is one of the most amazing, brilliant scams ruling class has ever come up with. Like, they got us so divided in a number of other ways too, which we could get into. But like, left and right is just a masterpiece of just like cultural, ideological division. And left and right comes from this trope, comes from the French Revolution, right? The people, I think it was in a courtroom, the people on the right wanted to stay in the monarchy. The people on the left wanted to have a republic where they would be the new rulers, the Jacobins, you know? So it was like this, either way, you're in a ruling class system. It's just, which ruling class system do you want? And we're still, all these centuries later, well, just a couple centuries later and some change, we're still arguing over who should occupy the throne. It's like, but guys, no one owns anyone else. Like, that, it's still built on a lie. We could kick the can down the road. We could try another 1,000 years, but it would still be a lie. Like, it's like empire, monarchy, all of it was an imposition. Go back to ancient Sumer. They said, we're the Ensis. We're gods on earth. We have the right to be your king because we're gods. Then it was like, oh, we have the divine right of kings. You know, later it was like, we're not gods, but God gave us the right to rule over you within a monotheistic worldview. Like, oh, no, there's only one God. We're not God, but we have connection to God. God gave us the right to rule over us. And then it was like, okay, people started catching on, wait, these are all lies, I guess, or whatever. For whatever reason, the ruling class decided they had to shift it. And it was like, no, guys, you as the voters are giving us the right to rule over you. And then that's now the lie we have to dissolve and break out of. Like, we can't give them the right to rule over us because we don't have the right to rule over each other. I can't tax you, Chris. I can't be like, Chris, you can't cross that imaginary line. You can't sell that item that's not even harmful without my permission. You can't, like, you need my permits and licenses and visas and passports to do all the things you already have the right to do. You owe me 30% of your labor, or I'm gonna, you know, abduct you. I don't have the right to do that to you. How could I have a right to vote for someone to do it to you? It's just, it's all a lie. And that may be inconvenient to have to go back to and deal with, but it's still true. It's a lie.
Still, and the, like, case.
It's still the case. And like, even jury duty, it's like, hey, if you don't show up, we're threatening you with fines and incarceration. It's like, that's your justice system. You start with threatening people with kidnapping and confinement in a human cage to serve justice. This is bogus. This is sick. It's so sick. Let's just face that reality and co-create from there. And if we had the numbers, we could break free. And how do you get those numbers? By doing what we're doing now. Spread the message, you know, interpersonally, online, books, everything. Just get it out there. And then maybe once, and regardless of what your perceived likelihood of that is, it's still possible. And the only way to find out if it's how likely it is if you try.
There you go. Got to get the real eyes on the job. Realizing.
That's right.
Real eyes and real boots on the ground.
That's right. So, you know, I think that's something it is daunting, but it's like, it's still in the realm of possibility, regardless of. And the other thing is, the more they push, the harder they push with the agenda, they do stir more and more people out of their slumber. Like with me as well, I've lived through 9/11. I've lived through COVID. I've lived through banking crisis. It's like, hey, come on, guys. They're lying to these people are sorcerers. They're like, they're manipulators. They work through, they lie and deceive and murder and steal. And they even tell you, like, well, who is the.
It does seem like it's getting more obvious. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I've realized this stuff for longer, but man, it's just so blatant these days.
Who is the CIA director? Pompeo. He said, we lie, we murder, we steal, right? Or some, I'm paraphrasing, but he's just like, they're telling you, like Trump is on just giving interview. He's in an interview saying like, I'm not getting into heaven. Like, they're telling you these people are demonic. They're evil. Yeah. They're sick. They're psychopathic. They love to torture people.
Yep.
And we got to stop letting them do it. We got to unite against
them. Quit giving
them
our power, right? Quit giving them, like, our energy.
It's embarrassing to be choosing between a Biden or a Trump. Like, these people, the same profile, like creepy, predatory, mass murderous, corporate shill. It's the same. Like, it's the same thing. It's how can we let ourselves be divided over this? Like, it's honestly just like embarrassing to humanity. Like, we got to stop imposing this authoritarianism on one another. And the more people who come on board with that, the more likely it becomes, the chain reaction becomes possible, that domino effect, that, like, you know, that becomes it actually could happen, and you make it like more likely by trying. And the there more, you like you said, if you don't believe you can cross the river, you're not even going to try. And therefore it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And you don't have to be attached to the outcome as like, you don't have to know how it's all going to end to try. You just try, you do your part while you're here. Maybe you get reincarnated back in and you try again. And it's just like, hey, while I'm here, I might as well do the work. Cause
at least at least you can live with a clear conscience, knowing that you are putting efforts in that, in the good direction, in the light direction, rather than just standing by and letting the terrors continue with no resistance, you know? So the onus is, the responsibility is on you folks that are watching and listening. What are you going to do tonight? What are you going to do tomorrow with your time and your energy to put out the word, to raise the volume, and to up the level of rhetoric, music, creative vibes out there that are helping explain that natural law is the binding force that is existing, pre-existing, and inherent in this realm we're in here. And our experience here as humans is to learn to recognize and deal with morality, and natural law is our way to do that, is to see, you know, how we act, how does that affect others, you know? And when we really are totally honest with ourselves, we begin to see through the lies. And so I think you've done a really powerful job, Devin, of encouraging people to be honest with themselves and others, and to try to use that objective lens to look at all this. So thank you so much for meeting me tonight and doing the work you're doing. Folks, check out archivegeneration.com. Check out Apophysis. And we'll be in touch in the future, and listening to your awesome music. Thanks so much, Devin. Really appreciate it.
It's an honor to be on the show. I really appreciate you having me on. And it's been a very enjoyable conversation. So thank you.
Right on. Fantastic. All right, folks, we'll see you next week. Evil is the destruction of freedom.
When you